The Blight Sea itself is as dead as its surface is calm, the perfect contrast to the thriving jungle it leads us to. There are no fish that probe its depths. At least what lives in this sea you would not recognize as fish, should you see them. Tosh seemed to find his lucidity once we took to the water. I trust him no more for it. He eyes our gear constantly, licking his lips unconsciously as he's carried off to distant dreams. He's weathered and gnarled from age and exposure. It's hard to distinguish him from the wood he hammered into the barge. This thing is little more than a floating platform, 10 paces across in either direction. The aft port quarter is covered by an overhang of dried palm branches, but aside from this, there is no shelter on board. The sail holds the wind well enough, in spite of the numerous holes and tears that cover its surface. Tosh just stands at the rudder, day and night. His mumbling has gotten clearer, but he still stares at us like we're hiding food under our clothes. He has ferried others across the sea to the shores of the Nanton, he told us, but none of them ever come back. Whether that's a veiled threat or a warning, I'm still uncertain. He still won't speak of Salisa, no matter how we ask. He did tell us a story I'd never heard before. The Blight Sea, he said, during one of his more lucid moments, had not always been so large, nor had it always been devoid of life. I thought it worth noting.
Once, he said, there was a tribe that lived near the centre of where this sea now sits. A poor tribe, dying of thirst in the grasslands that once bordered the Nanton and rested between the two great mountain ranges. Well, they prayed and they prayed, and as things got desperate, Inferi heard their pleas.